Call the meeting of the Higher Education and Career Readiness Policy and Finance Committee to order. We do have a quorum. And first order of business will be the minutes from the 14th, yesterday, February 14th. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes? Representative Pryor?
Mr. Chair, I reviewed the minutes, and I would move to approve the minutes.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions? Hearing none, all those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Those minutes are approved. All right. You're back. You've been here once already, haven't you?
I'm everywhere.
Yeah, I know. Well, glad to see you, Representative Davids. And House File 882, the motion will be that that would be referred to taxes. And so why don't you proceed to tell us about it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 882 has to do with loan forgiveness. If you have one of several various types of federal student loans, and through whatever criteria they used and it's forgiven, you don't have to add it back in as income to pay state income tax on it. That's pretty much what we're doing. Maybe, Mr. Williams, if I've missed something here, but basically we're saying if you're on a federal loan program and your loan is forgiven for whatever reason, that you don't have to add that back in as income as you do now. It's kind of what we did with the in the housing market on a short sale. House is worth $100,000. It sold for $200,000. You owe whatever. You don't have to declare that as income. We conform to the feds on that. We're kind of taking this to the student loan arena. Maybe Mr. Williams could just...
Mr. Williams, can you add some information?
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, I think that that description is basically correct. There's four main federal loan forgiveness programs for which discharge debt would be added back as income on the federal level. That's the revised pay-as-you-earn plan, the pay-as-you-earn plan, the income contingent plan, and the income-based plan. And so for those four payment plans, if your loans are forgiven, then they would not be taxed.
Do you have more to add, or are we asking?
I'd really appreciate
a question or two.
We can do whatever you'd like, Mr. Chairman.
I have the power. Is that what you're saying?
You do.
Okay. Members, any questions of Representative Davids? Oh, we do have one. Hang on. Representative Heitzman, thanks for coming through.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things. I was just going to notice, or maybe show Representative Christensen there's a mute button, so.
Oh.
And then the next thing, I just wanted to thank the author for bringing this fine piece of legislation.
Thank you, Representative Heitzman.
And you don't hear that very often from this committee.
I've never heard from this committee, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Any final comments?
I'd really appreciate your support.
All right. Then I, as Chair, will offer House File 882 be referred then to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's done. On the way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
All right. Next bill is Representative Dabney. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the Higher Ed Committee, and I move House File 306.
My bad, Mr. Chair. I've got a handout for the committee, and I failed to get it to your staff ahead of time. Okay. My apologies.
I meant to finish my motion, so that the motion would be to send you to taxes.
And all of me?
And the bill.
I am the bill. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good afternoon. House File 306 deals with the situation where under Minnesota law, instructional materials that are required by a school and instructors for students working on a course of study are tax exempt from sales taxes. Unfortunately, the Department of Revenue has taken the illustrative list in statute as instead an exhaustive list, not applying this exemption to instructional materials that otherwise meet the conditions set out in statute, meaning that students are paying sales tax and schools that sell materials to students are getting caught being assessed sales taxes when the statute indicates they should not. It is another factor, I would argue, in college affordability. Mother Dabney taught me that if you take care of the nickels and dimes, the quarters and dollars will take care of themselves. And this is nickels and dimes for kids in schools, students in schools, but it does start to add up. With me today is Carrie Johnson Palava, who's the director of Centerpoint Massage and Shiatsu School and Clinic, to share her schools and students' experience, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. Palava, is it?
Yes.
Okay. Would you like to identify yourself officially and then begin your testimony?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. I am Carrie Johnson Palava, owner and director of Centerpoint Massage and Shiatsu School and Clinic in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. And I am in support of House File 306. During a sales tax audit of my school in December 2012, the Department of Revenue, by the Department of Revenue, we learned that there was a new interpretation of the sales tax law regarding instructional materials. In a prior audit and in subsequent communication with the department regarding required materials, we were allowed to sell the required equipment and supplies beyond textbooks, such as lotions, massage tables, additional items, without charging sales tax. However, during the 2012 sales tax audit, we learned that instructional materials meant only textbooks, written manuals, or the electronic equivalent. As a result, we had to pay back sales taxes for years and that we were unable to collect, but we did. We paid them. This brought the definition of instructional materials to my attention. Why are only textbooks, written manuals, or the electronic equivalent non-taxable? Why do my students have to pay sales tax on their required equipment and supplies? It seems like the law has a built-in discrimination against vocational education, and this concerns me. Vocational education plays a very important role in our state and country. Vocational education teaches skills to students who are very employable after the completion of a program. My massage school is considered vocational education. We have a 98% placement rate of our graduates, and that's very high. Vocational education is not just academics. We teach skills. In order for the students to learn the skills, students need to purchase equipment and supplies to be able to practice their skills while they're going through the training. Our students need to practice 3 to 4 bodywork sessions every week outside of the classroom. And if any of you have ever had a massage, you'll be very glad that they practice that much during their training. They are required to purchase a massage table, a shiatsu mat, lotions, and linens at the beginning of their education. They cannot practice the skills without the equipment, and all of this equipment and supplies needed to learn massage and shiatsu are currently taxable. Our students have to pay sales tax. A student enrolled in a vocational training program gains the skill and knowledge needed for a lifelong career. Vocational programs range from less than a year in length to up to 2 to 3 years. Students have an opportunity to gain a career with far less tuition and time than a 4-year liberal arts education. Our graduates have the opportunity, especially in massage, to make $40,000 right out of school after the completion of a 1-year program. Education is currently under a lot of new regulations regarding gainful employment. Schools are being asked to reduce tuition, and yet the state is profiting from taxation of the equipment needed to complete the training program. Our students need the massage tables and shiatsu mats to practice their skills. The Department of Revenue says that this is professional equipment, and that they will use this equipment in their career, and therefore it should be taxable. However, the majority of our students work for an employer such as Massage Envy or a chiropractor, and they do not use this equipment that they used in their practice for their education. They don't use it in their professional practice. So I find this bias in the current interpretation of instructional materials to favor academia and to discriminate against vocational education. Yes, we use textbooks and those are tax exempt. However, in many vocational training programs, students are required to purchase equipment and supplies because they're required to practice their skills. They do not simply learn skills from a textbook. Skill development is essential and cannot be done without supplies and regular practice outside of the classroom. So why do these students currently enrolled in a course of study that trains them for future employment need to pay sales tax on required equipment and supplies? This seems unfair and out of line with Minnesota's intent to support our students in education. It's unfair to the student who chooses vocational education over those who choose an academic education. So I ask you to support House File 306 as submitted. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative.
Thank you very much. We have a question from Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And either Representative Davenport or the testifier can respond to this, but I'm looking at the line 1.16 and 1.17, and it's more of a theoretical question than anything, but just two parts. First is, let's say for welders or for diesel mechanics, that type of thing, who it is suggested of them that they acquire a certain list of tools.
Mm-hmm.
Does the tax deduction comport only to what is required to fulfill the requirements on the syllabus? Is there any maximum that the deduction would pertain to? Let's say that the student went over and beyond what would be necessary to fulfill the obligations of the syllabus? That would be my first question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Albright. I would point you to 1.17, where the requirement is that the materials to be tax exempt are prescribed for use. So you may have a suggested, you know, wouldn't it be nice if you bought? The statute already reads prescribed, required materials. So there is no cap, there's no dollar figure here to go a little deeper on your question.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And so then would equipment or supplies, and I'm thinking of the trades in particular, where there necessarily might be cleaning functions to keep the supplies that they own for purposes of the syllabus, or their clothing, welding jackets, that type of thing, where they might need to be cleaned with solvents or something, would those types of expenses also not pertain to the taxation on those services?
Daphne?
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, we've gotten into the deep end of the pool.
I right there.
Yep. So clothing would be tax exempt, and I'm going to wander off outside of my comfort zone. Cleaning, I believe, is taxable. And I don't have an answer for whether this exemption would extend to the cleaning. That would have to be determined, I think, by the Department of Revenue. Could be part of further conversations with them.
Yeah. All right. Mr. Chair, and I'm only familiar with this given the fact that my daughter is a paramedic, and the dry cleaning for uniforms kind of falls into that as an issue of germaneness. So I think just for clarity for the students' sake, if there's just an opportunity to make a better definition in terms of if we're already trying to correct that which the agency is taking umbrage at, I think if we can bring greater clarity to those provisions, I think we do ourselves a service as well as the students who would utilize this tax break. Thank you.
Any other questions? Do you Beauticians would be another job category or a training program where you'd have the same situation? Probably quite a number of programs where you have to purchase something in order to complete the program.
You know, Mr. Chair, as Ms. Johnson-Palava talked about, it's the vocational programs that probably get hit the hardest with this. So if you're doing cosmetology, not my strong suit, as you can see, scissors, combs, things like that. If you're doing welding, you know, there's a different, hopefully a different list of materials, but it's those vocational programs where this would have the most impact and the most benefit for the students.
Daniels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This brought back some memories for me back in the, I hate to say it, but the 70s. My career at the time was a small engine mechanic, and through probably about a 5 or 6 year period, there was, you know, several tools you have to buy to maintain, and there's always new things coming out. So you said there's no cap on the limit. I know some of the small engine mechanics that I know are probably spending their first 2 years in tech school probably $15,000, $25,000. Knowing that there's quite a few dollars going to that career, I know. Do we have any projections of what sales tax difference would be, what the cost of that might be at all? Not having, I don't know what the total is. I don't know.
Daphne, is there an estimate of any kind?
Mr. Chair and Representative Daniels, you may recognize that this bill was around last biennium as well. So I do not have a revenue note from this year, although the bill is identical. I'm wrong here. I was looking at a revenue note from 2001, the original projection, and I can share that with you, but I don't know that that's as beneficial as you might like. I just would remind the committee this is only for the time period you're in the training program. So I was a chef for a while I was never trained in that field. It was on the job. When I purchased knives and the like, I paid sales tax, which I would if I were a practitioner in that situation. If you're in culinary school, this would apply as tax-exempt purchases because they would be required part of your training program.
Okay. Daniels?
That's good. Thank you.
I think once you're employed, and I think then you can write, it's a write-off, I believe, isn't it, in taxes?
Mr. Chair, you're probably, depending on the situation, you may well be right. There's obviously technical things, and of course, sure. Once you're employed, you actually have an income to pay the taxes.
You're right. Makes a difference. Any other questions? Otherwise, we thank you both for being here. Representative Dabney, for your bill, House File 306. I move that House File 306 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Approved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Appreciate it.
Next up, we have House File 802, Representative Daniels. Representative Daniels, you can move your bill if you'd like. This one actually would be laid over, perhaps. So,
okay.
Just make the motion that House File 802 will be possibly laid over for possible inclusion.
I agree.
All right.
I'd make that motion. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee, for hearing this bill. We did present this one last year. I think it's got the It's extremely important. We all talked about the silver tsunami coming up, and our senior care facilities are hurting for staff. And with this bill, House File 802, I think we can get in the right direction too. As I called it last year, make caring for seniors more sexy. So what we're going to do is connect with Winona State University Healthcare Force to basically develop education materials that would increase awareness of career opportunities in the field of senior care. Health Force Minnesota is a partnership between the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, healthcare industry, and the community groups. The goal is to continue and address the shortage of paid caregivers in the field of older adult services. In 2015, we did good work in addressing the training and retention needed by passing much-needed reimbursement reforms, support wage increases, and enhanced scholarship opportunities for people already working in the older adult services field. But we need to do more because we're going to have more seniors coming into our facilities, and we would like to just have the materials in K through 12 just out there or offering a career path that they might enjoy and get the reward from. And with that, I will turn over to my two testifiers, Carrie and Karen.
All right, who's starting?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Erin Bowie. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Care Providers of Minnesota, here today on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. I want to thank Representative Daniels for bringing this bill forward. As we've all heard, Minnesota is aging. 60,000 Minnesotans will turn 65 this year and every year through 2030. In a few short years, for the first time, there will be more seniors than school-aged children. People are living longer and have more care needs. We know we are facing a shortage of caregivers for our aging population. Our providers report that one of the main challenges they face in hiring is the lack of applicants for open positions. This is an issue that affects all sectors of senior care. Knowing that our senior population is growing and their demand for services will grow year after year, we need to work toward building and developing the caregiving workforce now. The overarching goal of this bill is to help address the shortage of professional caregivers and to help providers of senior care services recruit the caregiving workforce. We need to help build the pipeline to get people into careers in senior care services so we can address the shortage for now and for the future. By developing a campaign to raise awareness of caregiving professions in school-age students, rural communities, and dislocated workers, we can hopefully start building the future generation of caregivers. The Minnesota State Centers of Excellence have experience running a similar type of career promotional campaign through the Dream It, Do It manufacturing jobs campaign, which is why we are interested in partnering with them on this initiative. Thanks again to Representative Daniels for bringing this bill forward, and I'll now turn it over to my imperative partner to talk about how the campaign could be executed.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Carrie Thurlow. I'm the Senior Vice President of Advocacy at Leading Age Minnesota and also here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. This is a pretty straightforward bill. It seeks funding to go to the Minnesota Healthcare Center on Excellence, also known as Health Force Minnesota, which is centered out of Winona, Minnesota, to partner with the senior care sector to develop promotional materials. We strongly believe that this is not an area where many young people are looking to begin their careers, but they are wonderful careers. They're rewarding in terms of the relationships they develop with the people they care for, and there's a variety of jobs that are available. And quite frankly, we need all of as many people as we can get. As Ms. Bowie indicated, not only do we not have enough professional caregivers to deal and to meet the needs of seniors today, but as Minnesota ages, we're going to need more of them. We think that this approach works. It's been demonstrated with other centers of excellence. And as Ms. Bowie indicated, it will be focused on some key areas where we think we can recruit and build our pipeline. So the bill is pretty straightforward. I'm gathering the theme of the committee is less is more, so I'm happy to answer any questions about the bill. And thank Representative Daniels for bringing this forward.
Thank you. I think you've answered a question I had, and that was why Winona was chosen. And I think you covered that. get on the list. Haley? Just looking through the list, and I guess you were it.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Daniels, for bringing the bill forward. I'd just like to speak on behalf of this bill and for the rest of the committee and the audience. I have worked with 360 Minnesota on their manufacturing initiative, and they are very well run. It's research-based. Think of it, a good example is the dairy industry. Think of the Got Milk campaign and when they had all the advertisement with the milk mustache. That really helped the dairy industry. So it's a similar model that you have to get kids involved, you have to have marketing campaigns, and you have to get hands-on, and that's what they're doing in the manufacturing industry. So I just wanted to, again, support it, and the model is a good one, and it's worked in other industries.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have a couple questions. The first one, it seems to have a pretty big scope, beginning in kindergarten and going up through dislocated workers. So in terms of age groups and kind of where this population is, it's pretty broad. So how's that going to work?
Who wants to?
Mr. Chair, Representative. As you'll note, the appropriation right now is blank, so the program is scalable. There will likely be different promotional materials developed for each of those specific groups. For example, Health Force Minnesota currently runs scrubs camps that are targeted towards that K-12 population, and potentially you could see one potentially being developed specific to long-term care or expanded for that, where you might have different promotional materials for some of the other groups as well. We view that as part of the development process, as those conversations would evolve as we partner with Health Force Minnesota. Those details will be worked out. We recognize it's a broad scope, and again, as the program is scalable, we hope to reach as many of these populations as possible.
And if I may, second question, is that right? There's no dollar amount attached right now. Do you see kind of a minimum amount to be successful and have an impact, and then a range up to at this point?
Ms. Bowie?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think at the high end, if we wanted to look at a Cadillac program for a two-year program, we'd be looking in the ballpark of $800,000, and we could probably scale that down to a ballpark of $200,000, depending on how many materials we wanted to produce and the types of media we would use.
Okay. I know the school in my hometown has a program that's new this year in the, I don't know what grade, it's high school, I think, age. That's getting, again, those folks at that age interested in a career. And it's been, although it's brand new, I think it filled up. They have all the students they can handle. And it's a cooperation between the local nursing homes and K-12 and the community college. So it'll be interesting to how that work is. I guess in all of these areas where you have a need, what impresses me is the creativity that people can come up with to solve those issues. And it may take a while, but it's, you know, it's all positive. So anything else? Oh.
I'll go quick.
Mark, can you slide over?
Don't move too far. I got a suggestion for you. Mark Hughes, and I spent 12 years on the Minnesota State Council on Disabilities. And 12 years by law was all you could stay on the board, but I did. And that's comprised of about 12 to 15 people from all over the state of Minnesota. And when I was just about done, they were getting involved with the vets and some senior folks from around the state. So offline, I'll give you the phone numbers and the contacts over there if that can help. Thank you.
Well, thank you for sharing. Yeah. Any other comments, questions from the members? I sometimes neglect to do this, but anyone in the audience would like to testify for or against? It's kind of what I expected, but he really liked to offer anyway, so means you did a good job, Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Chair.
Good bill. So if there's no other questions, Then we'll move that House File 802 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Need your attention for a minute, members. I'm sorry that some aren't here. This sounds so awesome, doesn't it? Actually, what I'm going to do is invite you over to the President Kaler's house tomorrow night. You're all invited. It's a reception, 5 to 7:30, and you don't have to even let them know you're coming. Just show up whenever you can, and it's a nice evening, and it's over on East Cliff. If you've never been there, it's easy to find. I think you just take a right on Marshall and then a left, and you're there. So it's, you can Google it if you have to. But I just want to remind you to be there. And they will. Oh, well, maybe you've already gotten an invite.
We did.
Okay, just a reminder then, I guess, is what I'm telling you. You know how we forget things around here. So, anyway, it's always fun if you've never been there before. I know it's a special invitation to the newly elected members and the rest of us, too. And they always have some good food, good conversation, and a good chance to just kind of be relaxed and enjoy some university food. Yeah. They know how to make good food over there. Yeah. So, any... oh, here, one more thing. Tonight is the evening of discovery for Min Drive, and that's from 4:30 to 6:30 over at the History Center. So if you're wondering what to do tonight, that kind of fills that need. Food is also provided for guests. Two nights in a row now, we got food. Okay, so that's tonight, 4:30 to 6:30, History Center. Tomorrow night, it's over at East Cliff, President Kaler's house. Weather should be good. So I think that concludes our business for the day. So we are adjourned.